Okay, we're all set? Okay. I want to call the Planning Commission meeting together, and I will ask Commissioner Cooper if you will please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's all stand.
Please stand, face the flag, right hand over your heart. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Plino?
Here.
Commissioner Cooper?
Here.
Commissioner DeRees?
Here.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Here.
Commissioner Winget?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Ward?
Here.
We have six present and one excused absence.
Okay, and I might add that Commissioner Benz is an excused absence. So, the agenda tonight, we have two items. One is a tree removal, and another is a request for a conditional use permit. And can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, would you?
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner DeRees?
Yes.
Commissioner Winget?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Ward?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0.
Okay, I want to welcome everybody, and as is customary, this is the time. We're on television tonight, Channel 20, and you can have 3 minutes. You can talk on any subject you want, as long as it's not addressing the two issues tonight, and you can go to the lectern. And does anybody care to participate in the public comment tonight? Seeing nobody rushing to the lectern, I'll close the public comment. Do any of the commissioners have any business they want to bring up tonight? Okay. Hearing none, we'll close that off. The one item on the consent calendar, and that is to approve the minutes of the regular meeting on April 5. That was in our packet, and I'm assuming everybody had a chance to review that. Is there a motion to accept the minutes?
Yes, I move to approve the minutes for the April 5th meeting.
Second that motion.
Okay.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Winget?
Yes.
Commissioner DeRees?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Ward?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0.
Okay, the first item on the agenda has to do with the tree removal. It's all yours.
Thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the Planning Commission. Tonight we have a tree removal permit, PLN 2011-1397, tree removal permit 2011-0148 at 8995 Montecito Avenue, the Chevron station. The tree removal permit proposes to remove a multi-trunk 125-inch DBH coast live oak. The tree has been determined by the arborist to be in severe decline, and it does have a potential hazard in because it's in a high traffic area due to the traffic volume of cars coming in and out of the parking lot to get gasoline and use the retail service center that's there. As stated before, the project location is at 8995 Montecito Avenue. The tree itself is located here. This is the main entry off of Montecito Avenue. To the north is El Camino Real. The tree is located at that main entry point and sort of acts as a gateway feature to that entry. The general plan designation is general commercial, and the zoning designation is commercial tourist. The city approved construction of the gas station and retail convenience center at the site in 1990 through a precise plan, and the original building plans preserved the large oak and a landscape area near the entrance of Montecito Avenue. In addition, there was a car wash that was constructed in 1999 that was permitted by the city as well. The subject tree over the years, from construction in 1990 to the construction of the car wash, has had several limb failures, especially those in the recent storms in March, December, and January. Several large failures have occurred. The recommendation for removal is as such because the arborist has identified sparse growth at this time. In addition to that, large decay pockets in the trunk. As stated earlier, there are large limb failures that did not heal properly, and the arborist report states that the tree cannot be pruned any further. This picture right here is one that we took. We took a site visit. You can see the limb failure right here. This is a recent one. I believe it's from the March storm, where a rather large branch from the tree had fallen off due to the amount of rain and wind. Here's some additional photos of the tree itself. Again, you can sort of see here some of the previous limb failures, as this would be a part of the tree right here on this end, and over here, these are cuts. You have large decay pockets near the main trunk. Again, this is another limb failure that happened. The limbs did not heal properly. And here's a view of the large oak tree itself from the parking lot near the car wash. So as you can see, large portions of the tree itself extend a little bit over the sidewalk on Montecito Avenue, as well as this vehicle right here, the city car. It extends well into the parking lot. So this tree is $1,983.33 into the tree fund. The Planning Commission, in its findings, need to make a finding in considering any tree removal request. Staff is recommending that the finding be made that the tree is dead, diseased, or injured beyond reclamation as certified by a tree condition report from the arborist. Based on the arborist evaluation as well as a site visit and analysis, findings can be made to approve the proposed removal, subject again to the mitigation in the tree fund as well as the planting of the one 24-inch box tree. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt PC Resolution 2011-0005 to allow the removal of one hazardous coastal live oak tree totaling 125 inches DBH, subject to the condition's approval and mitigation. And with that, are there any questions from the Planning Commission?
Okay.
I'm Ron Rennell. I'm a certified arborist from Bunyan Brothers Tree Service.
Well, wait just a minute. The procedure is normally the commissioners would ask the staff some questions right now, and after that, the applicant has an opportunity to present his case, and after that, the public can go up there, and everyone has 3 minutes, and after that, we go back and forth, and if are you the applicant? Okay, then we may call you back. Okay, well, we may call you back, and some of the commissioners may have some questions directly for you, so just kind of hold it for now. Okay, yes, Commissioner Schmidt.
Yes, Alfredo. As far as the 24-inch box tree, is there a plan about where it's going to be planted, or is it supposed to be put generally in the same area on the site, or can it be anywhere on the property?
Staff's hope that it has to be on site, and it's staff's hope that it's actually planted generally in the same area, maybe sort of being selective of the tree type, native tree, obviously. So we're hoping that's in the same area, but considering that this site is pretty much built out, realistically, this would potentially be the only area that would work in terms of the replanting of the one tree.
Yeah, not my concern, but it's just kind of a comment. It seems like, you know, with such a large tree, that area right there is probably pretty well inundated with roots. Is there a program in which the city has and onto the sidewalk in that area? Is quite a large branch, and they cleaned it up really quickly, but you could see the remains that were there. Thank you.
Anyone else? Any other questions?
Yes, I have a question.
Excuse me. Yes.
The applicant will be required to put in a tree and pay $1,983.33 to the tree fund. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So both of those things, not
yes.
One or the other, but both.
Yes, the fee has been adjusted to accommodate the box tree. So if the box tree isn't planted, then the fee goes even higher.
Now, I see a reference here to 45-gallon trees also. What is that's circled. Why is that on page 8 of the staff report, the diagram there, lower right-hand side? See what I'm talking about?
You mean the 45-gallon trees?
Correct.
That yes. That would be the mitigation if they don't do any pay any fees, but it's virtually impossible to plant 45-gallon trees on site.
Okay. So it's one box tree and either 45-gallon trees or $1,983.33.
That is correct. And again, this mitigation is substantially higher than what the Planning Commission is used to being seeing in terms of tree removal permits, simply because we charge a different rate for commercial and multifamily properties.
I see. And then this is also a large tree, too, so that requires more mitigation also.
That is correct.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, for the applicant, go ahead. Basic rules are simple. Just state your name, where do you live, and make sure the microphone's on.
Testing. Talk.
No, there's a little button right on the microphone.
I got to be smarter than the microphone?
Yeah.
Cool. Hello, testing.
Yes.
Okay. I'm Ron Rennell. I own Bunyan Brothers Tree Service. I'm a certified arborist. I'm representing the applicant. And I just want to make myself obvious for any or available for any questions. It's pretty obvious, this tree, the condition it's in right now. It's been in decline for several years now, and it's definitely a safety issue, a health and safety issue for the public. I think it's pretty cut and dry, straight and clear, the situation and what it presents. Else from anyone else I can help you with?
Any more questions? Well, thank you very much. Okay, anyone in the public want to come up? Yes, please. Just state your name and tell us where you live.
Art Guzman, Santa Maria. I'm the station manager, the applicant at this point. I'm not quite sure what type of tree I'm supposed to replant.
Okay, staff?
Alfredo, is it an oak tree I'm supposed to replant again?
It's a native tree. We prefer a native tree.
So it'd be just any native tree.
We have a list. That's something that you and I can work out after, before we close up the application itself. But we would prefer a native tree. And especially at an earlier state, it's a lot easier to be able to prune and manage the tree versus, when the station was built, building around it. So you and I can discuss the tree planting before the close of this.
If I were to present a larger oak tree than a 24-inch, would his mitigation be reduced? Because I have a large supply of oak trees, of coastal live oaks, and I can transplant one and bring a larger tree. Would that be an opportunity?
Yes, we can reduce the fee based on the box size. That's how the fee is calculated in the mitigation. So as Commissioner Colin Marino pointed out, why is it say 5-gallon trees? So that's if you were to plant if you had a larger project and had the ability to plant in that area, that's what you would plant. But typically applicants do either they just pay the fee or they do a combination of the two. So in this case, you would do a combination of the two.
Because I have trees that I've spayed out and transplanted, very nice, beautiful specimens. That would be an opportunity possibly.
That's fantastic. So. Like I said, we can discuss the mitigation prior to the removal fee. So.
Terrific. Thank you very much.
Okay. Does the applicant want to ask any more questions? Or?
Do I need to do that officially? Is
anyone else in the public? Okay. No. Go ahead. Better to have you speaking from the microphone. That way everybody can pick it up.
I'm just going to restate or reiterate what I have access. I transplant oak trees, large specimens. So I just wondered if there would be a possibility or would it please the council if we brought in a larger Quercus agrifolia instead of a 24-inch box. I mean, I have 48-inch boxes, and then I also have beautiful specimens that I transplant.
Done. If you're going to go above and beyond your means, you get a gold star. So, kudos to the applicant. And so that, and it does reduce the mitigation fee in the end as well.
I have one question. Can you estimate the size of the tree that you'd be able to transplant that you have available?
I have several different options. If you go on my internet page, I can show you several of them.
I'm just wondering if you had just a number that you guys compared to the 125 inches that's being removed.
I could bring one in that's probably 15 feet tall that's, got 6, 7, 8 inches
okay.
Right now.
which would be a substantial size bigger.
Than a 24-inch box one.
Way bigger.
Yeah, okay, that's a lot.
Yeah, it'd be about three times as big. Yeah. And I mean, I can bring them even bigger. I mean, I can bring in a 14 or 16 inch, but we don't want to get into a $15,000, $20,000 tree.
Okay. Commissioner Schmidt?
And would that be the equivalent? Would that be the equivalent of the 45-inch box tree then? So if the one that you're talking about,
uh-huh.
And so if the 45-inch box comes in, then there would be obviously no mitigation fee money that would be paid at that point. So
if that would be negotiable, I mean, I could bring in a specimen tree that's worth $3,000 to wipe out a $2,000 bill, but then the city's not going to get the money, but we are going to get a very beautiful tree right there again to replace that.
Good. Thank you.
Okay.
I have one question. What is the water maintenance period for a tree that you transplant? How many years does it have to be watered and cared for? And is there a program to do that?
Probably 5 years.
Okay.
But I think you have access to a drip irrigation. You could set up a time. You could have everything there. Very simple. It's not
okay.
Something where somebody's going to have to go buy with it and water all the time. You have access to everything. Modern technology, shall I say.
Alfredo?
I just want to point a clarification for the record that the tree ordinance right now only goes up to 30, it only specifies 36-inch box trees, so we don't have a exact dollar figure in our formula for larger, so that's something that the planning director would have to determine what the exact in-lieu fee would be in terms of you know, reducing the amount of mitigation required if you plant the 45-inch box tree.
That'd be fine. I just like that as an option to you because it'd be really nice to take away a big tree and put in something decent instead of a little 24-inch box. We can put in something substantial. I thought that'd be nice.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
The overall mitigation package that's required, I'm a little confused on that.
Right now, the condition number 3 states that the applicant shall pay $1,988.33 in the tree mitigation fund and replant a minimum of one 24-inch box tree. So if they were to plant no tree, that mitigation would be higher.
Okay.
So it's right now factored in to plant the one tree. If Planning Commission recommends to add sort of at the end, the applicant shall pay $1,988.33 to tree mitigation fund and replant a minimum of one 24-inch native box tree in the landscaping area of the subject property prior to removal of the coastal live oak. The applicant also has the option to plant a larger tree
and
to thereby reduce the amount of mitigation. If the Planning Commission feels it, they can add that at the end of the standard condition. That should satisfy, in my belief, both the applicant as well as the commission.
So in order to achieve this, then, we need to add it tonight as a condition.
It would just clarify the actual condition of approval.
Okay. And so what we'd be doing then is substituting for the 45-gallon trees or $1,983.33. We'd be offering to substitute for that another 48-inch tree. Is that what we're talking about?
No.
No.
What you're essentially doing is by that little adding that little statement that says anything higher will reduce the amount of mitigation. Yeah, the 40 box trees is just an example. Had you just put in, you know, 6 box trees, obviously 6 24-inch, that mitigation would have gone lower. It would have been, you know, maybe 25 5 gallons instead. I don't know how the formula spits that out. It's a mathematical formula. So the 40 trees itself, that's just assuming that you either pay the fee or you plant the 40 trees.
Yeah, no, we move. Right, I understand.
Okay.
That.
So by adding what I stated earlier, that just sort of sets the condition and says, if the applicant plants anything larger than 24 inches, then the mitigation will be reduced, the amount of fee. The $1,988.33.
Okay, the monetary amount. All right, so now let's just drop back here. There's right now, a 24-inch box tree is called for, along with either 45-gallon trees or approximately $2,000 in mitigation money, right?
Correct. So
does it substitute for everything? Does it substitute for the 24-inch tree? Does it substitute for the money component? How are you conceiving of this?
Maybe I could clarify that. The way that our tree ordinance is written, it's for every 6 inches of tree removed, there's a certain mitigation fee or a number of replantings. For this one, I believe a live oak on a commercial property is about $100 per 6 inches. It's when we have a larger tree, so the 24-inch box is specified, 15 gallons are also specified in a 36-inch box. So those larger trees reduce the mitigation. But what the applicant's talking about here, transplanting a tree, we actually don't see that very often. Those trees are very expensive. So our tree ordinance doesn't specify an exact tree size base and mitigation for this type of situation. I think in staff's opinion, we definitely prefer a larger tree. It's going to do better on site. It's going to look better, and it's going to replace, you know, this very large tree. And so if I think it could be, the Planning Commission might be able to kind of discuss what you think a tree of this size would be worth, and you know what the mitigation would be reduced, or we could just say that the mitigation will be reduced, and we could have our planning director take a look at it, just based on know what he feels the appropriate fee would be.
Because I'm wondering whether it's an even swap, taking out this big old one that's dying and replacing it with a nice healthy transplanted large tree.
Mm-hmm. Our tree ordinance doesn't specify an exact mitigation and replanting ratio for this type of situation. So you do have some discretion, I believe, in this situation. Maybe the applicant could give us his opinion what the value of this tree would be if, you know, to bring this larger tree into this on site.
I'm proposing doing the tree and actually taking in eating some of the money. I'd probably give you a value tree of close to $3,000. In lieu of the mitigation, if that would be acceptable. And that way, I have an abundance of these trees, but I mean, that's the value of these trees that I have. So it'd be an opportunity to actually save money on a large tree, and it's going to wipe out his mitigation, then I can charge him the mitigation fees, the company. And they get a big tree, he's still spending the same amount, but you guys are getting a bigger tree. But in the backside, then you guys aren't getting the money towards the city. But we are a tree, very nice specimen tree.
I have a question. How much would is a 24-inch box tree, how much would that cost? What
could a tree in lieu of that tree?
Okay. I'd like to make a motion that we remove that we approve the tree removal and.
Yeah, just read all that.
Permit number 20110148. And then subject to the following, which where we'd make this change where the applicant would pay, would put in a larger tree, and then we would waive the mitigation fee of $1,988.33.
Can the Planning Commission please specify the size of tree in order to do the waiver?
The size of the tree.
Yes.
What size was the tree that you the $3,000 approximate value?
Choice of three or four different trees. If you will, I can bring you pictures or send them to you, or if you want to come with me, I can show you the paper route. It would be substantial.
Approved by the staff. Give us a minute here to work this out.
You want me to take a whack at it?
I think Lynn's got it.
Okay.
And Chuck, I think Lynn's got it.
Let me take a whack at it.
He's right online.
Let me take a whack at making this motion.
Remotion.
Let me move that we approve resolution PC 2011-0005. To allow the removal of one hazardous multi-trunk coast live oak totaling 125 inches, subject to conditions of approval and mitigation, but adding the option of having a tree transplanted of a size satisfactory to the staff in lieu of the mitigation called for in this motion, which currently refers to 24-inch box tree and $1,983.33.
I second that motion.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any discussion before we vote? Yes.
Alfredo?
Specific in the tree ordinance, but you can add a condition if you would like.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yes.
On that same subject, is there a maintenance requirement for the trees that are planted pursuant to the tree ordinance?
Again, there's nothing specific in the actual ordinance itself. However, I believe the applicant did state that there's currently irrigation and drip on site right now today. So I'm assuming that would suffice if they were to, you know, redo the irrigation to provide water on site.
And may I ask, what has been the experience with the trees that are planted pursuant to mitigation requirements under the tree ordinance? Have these trees, I mean, have you had a problem with them not surviving? Have they lasted?
We really don't have the data for that. I mean, we do, when these tree removal permits come in, we do follow up to ensure that the planting is redone. However, we don't have any data specifically that states this tree had survived in, you know, 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, 4 years down the road.
So I guess the point is, though, you're not aware of any problem in this regard. There's been no history of problems along these lines. Is that right?
I believe so. Maybe Callie has a little bit more to add to that.
Okay. When we do smaller plantings, like when we do our oak tree replanting for their seedlings, I think we see somewhere between a 60 to 75% survival rate. That's what we shoot for. But when we're looking at something like this with a tree that's, you know, already large and well-established, I think we're looking at a much higher survival rate. You could add a condition that, you know, that they pay mitigation or replant if the tree dies in a certain number of years. To really enforce that, we'd probably have to hold a bond on it or require them to come back to remove it. So that it, if you add the condition, it kind of needs to have some way for us to enforce it. But we don't really foresee a problem in this situation. And if you were concerned, maybe the arborist could speak to what he sees as survival rate.
I have a question. If the tree was planted and then died in 2 or 3 years, wouldn't we be back here talking about it again anyway? Because they'd have to have a permit to have it removed. So adding a condition to make sure that it stays alive is kind of moot, right?
That's correct. If we're talking about adding this large tree, they do need to come back to remove it as well.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to call a question.
To add to that.
We have a motion, and it's been seconded. If anybody shuffling my papers here. Okay, next item on the agenda is a conditional use permit. And do we have any ex parte communication on that?
No.
Nope.
No.
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 I went by the property but didn't see anybody. So, Kelly, we're ready for your presentation.
Yes, our next item is going to be a conditional use permit for an oversized accessory structure. The project is located on San Marcos Road. It's in the residential suburban zoning district, so this is large lot residential. To give you a little bit of background about the site, there was a stop work order that was issued back in August of 2005. The building inspector saw that a detached garage was being constructed without permits, and so he issued a stop work order on the site. The property owner has since submitted for building permits and this conditional use permit application. So the city can't issue a building permit for the structure because of the size unless the Planning Commission makes the findings for approval and approves the use permit. In this photo, you can see the garage at the back of the property behind the primary residence. So it is slightly visible from the street. It is located farther back up on the hill. According to our municipal code, detached accessory structures cannot exceed 50% of the size of the main house, and that includes everything that's attached and enclosed on the main house. So in this case, we have a main house and garage that's 1,818 square feet, and we have a detached garage and workshop that's proposed at 1,500 square feet. It's actually 1,522 square feet. It's a two-story structure. We have 915 square feet on the first floor and 607 square feet on the second floor. And therefore, in order to approve it at this size, they have to abridge and workshop only. It cannot be used as conditioned or habitable space. And what the city does in these type of situations, it's the standard to do a deed restriction, and that notifies future property owners that this is not a living unit. So it records with the property, and it goes on to future owners to notify them. It can't be a studio, a second unit, habitable space, can't have a kitchen, a full bathroom, a tub, heating, or air conditioning. So these are items that we consider to create a living unit, and this is only permitted as a detached structure. A second unit would be permitted on the property if they were able to show that the septic system was adequate and they had adequate access and the building was upgraded, but there are additional fees that are required to be paid for a second unit and code upgrades to make it a habitable space. So in this case, we're only looking at a detached accessory structure. There are some site improvements that are required in order to finish the structure. The fire department requires a 12-foot wide paved driveway going up to the garage, and it's only the areas that are at the steeper slope that are required to be paved. The front of the driveway can be a gravel all-weather road, so they want to make sure that they can get a fire truck up to the property and turn it around if there was ever a fire at the structure. Because this will be a garage for vehicles, there is potential for a fire at this location, so the fire department is concerned that they have fire access. There are some native trees located along the property line that will be protected when they're doing the grading for the road. There is an arborist that has taken a look at these, identified tree protection, and will be out to monitor during the grading. And there's also a storage container on the property that will need to be removed prior to final of the building permit. The proposed project qualifies for a Class 3 categorical exemption. And the Planning Commission has five findings that are required to be made for approval of the use permit. Probably the most relevant one is that it must be consistent with the character of the immediate neighborhood and not contrary to its orderly development. And so basically you have to find that it's compatible with the existing homes in the neighborhood. What we're looking for here is that the exterior design goes with the surrounding houses. The size isn't going to overshadow the house or the surrounding neighborhood. So staff is recommending that the Planning Commission approve the resolution as proposed. Staff believes that Planning Commission can make these required findings. And the applicant is here in the audience for structures that are up to 50% of the size of your main house. So he wouldn't be allowed to do those four structures, but a building permit would be required to convert the garage to the second unit, and all the fees would have to be paid.
Okay, So this structure could potentially be made a living unit now if you wanted to just pay the fees and make sure that the septic was up to standard.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, Commissioner Schmidt.
And as far as the site plan, there is a turnout. It looks like it's a turnout at the corner where the driveway turns towards the garage. Is that the legal turnaround that the fire department is requiring?
Yes, that's correct. So there will be some additional grading right here off the driveway to get that fire turnaround in there. And I also wanted to clarify, it looks like they are just under an acre. Our municipal code requires that they either be connected to sewer or over an acre if they're on septic. So that would probably be the determining factor for the second unit.
The basin plan.
When you say it would be the determining factor, could you clarify that? If it's over an acre, you have to, you can use septic. If it's under an acre, you have to use a sewer system?
That's correct. That is part of the second unit ordinance. I'm sorry, I should have been more clear with that. It's comes down from the water board. It's a requirement that you have to have at least an acre if you're on septic and you have two houses, or if you're under an acre, you're connected to sewer. So in this case, I do believe he's on a septic system, so he would need to extend to sewer if that was available. Otherwise, it wouldn't be allowed to be converted to a second unit. So those are part of building permit items that we would go through if they ever decided to do a conversion. We would look at all of those items and make sure that the site and the structure met all of the codes.
So then the cost of making this a living unit would also entail the cost of connecting into the sewer line?
If it was available nearby, that would be an option.
And if that weren't available, then you'd have to add a second septic?
No, the site is too small for two units based on our codes. So there is no exception if it's under an acre and it's not connected to sewer.
So it would have to, I see. So then it's not certain that you could have a second living unit on these premises if the sewer is not available.
That's correct.
Listen, just to clarify, the basin plan says basically one dwelling unit, one residence per acre. They would consider the second unit another residence. So they would have to have 2 acres to meet the basin plan requirements to be able to have two septic systems or two houses on the property, unless, of course, if there is the connection to the sewer at some time in the future. So the basin plan is, our local ordinance reflects what the basin plan says, which is one dwelling unit per 1 acre.
Yes, Commissioner Calamorino.
Yes, I have a question also about the history here. So in 2005, of August of 2005, a stop work order was issued. And were there any fines or anything associated with that?
No, I don't believe they have been fined at all for the stop work order. We try to work with property owners, and as long as they continue to move forward on permitting the structure, we don't start to find them unless we have a problem.
Okay, so now we're 5.5 years later, going on 6 years later, and this is before us again. Is there some reason for the long delay that you're aware of? I mean, were there problems, in other words, working between the city and the applicant here?
No, we saw long stretches of time between resubmittals of the plans. The applicant first came in 2006 to submit the conditional use permit, and staff gave them corrections on their plans. It was a long time before the plans came back in, so it has been more of a drawn-out process in this case. So when too much time goes by, staff sends a letter, initiate the code enforcement, and then we see the permit move forward again. So in this case, it has taken a while. At this point, they do have building permits that are ready to issue. They have submitted for the building permits and have completed all of the corrections and have satisfied all the departments as far as what's currently proposed. So it is ready to issue if Planning Commission approves the size.
I think it's fair to assume, isn't it, that the city has absorbed more costs than usual with a conditional use permit application in this case because of the fact that action and violation.
New codes since this was started. You just made the statement that staff has been satisfied with the plans that have been submitted and the permits ready to issue. Were there code changes that affected changes in the design of the building for fire, for electrical, for anything like that?
The building permit was just submitted in 2010, so that the building permit does comply with all of the current codes as of, I think, about a year ago when it was submitted.
So it's not vested to that first permit?
No. The original permit that came in was the conditional use permit. We encouraged the applicant to come to Planning Commission to get approval of the size before they go too far with the building permit. But in this case, they decided just to wrap it all up together.
For clarification, what can the second floor be used for storage? Could I have an art studio in there? I mean, when you said studio, that I'm thinking that's a residential studio. Mm-hmm. So they could do pottery up there if they wanted to do that, or storage. Is there other things that are acceptable?
It's really the conditioned space that we're concerned about. So adding like the kitchen and the heating and air conditioning. So we have certain definitions in our code for a studio versus a garage or a shop. And our definition says that a studio is a conditioned space less than 450 square feet. And this one is too large to comply with that. So it can't be a studio by our code's definition. But it could be used as an art studio. It just can't have the heating and air conditioning.
Okay. If there's no more questions, let's have the applicant come up and state your name and...
My name is James Russell, and I live in Atascadero. Was there questions you needed to have answered?
Anything specific you want to say about the project?
Well, you had that one question about the length of time. And basically, the finances were used elsewhere. And that's why the long delay.
I do have one question. Is there gas plumbed to the building?
No.
Okay. Are you on propane, or do you have natural gas? Do you have a propane tank on site?
I'll be restoring old cars in the bottom part, and my wife wanted to do some art in the top.
Okay. And was that the intention from the beginning?
Yes, sir.
And how is it that you didn't get permits from the start? I mean, how did you get off on the wrong foot here?
Well, I had people that had the time then, and we knew that it was going to take quite a while to get permits, so they said, let's get busy. If you want us to help you, we're going to do it now. So I thought, well, okay. So we did it.
And then what happened? You got caught?
Yeah, basically.
And how did that occur, do you know?
Yes, the neighbor was putting in a pool in the back, way in the backyard. And the inspector saw the new lumber.
So had that not happened, this thing would have just gone up in violation of the city ordinance, right?
At the time, but I still had that conditional use permit in the city, so they knew that something was going on.
I don't understand. You had already applied for a conditional use permit?
Oh no. Oh. As soon as she talked to me about the building, I went down to the city.
Right. But that was only after you were caught.
Yes, it was.
Right.
Yes, it was.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions? Do you have anything else you want to say to us?
Just that I would like to have the thing completed to where we can have access to it.
I have a question. How long would it take you to complete the project?
Oh, boy. Well, it's going to be a monetary thing. I hope it's within 6 months.
Okay. Okay, so it's your intent, if this is approved, to go ahead and complete it?
And complete it.
Okay,
yes.
Good.
Because I have cars sitting out in the weather.
Fine. Anybody else have any questions? Thank you very much. We'll open this to the public. Anybody want to comment on this? Okay. Any further discussion before
yes.
we have a motion?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I have some comments. These kinds of cases really, I think, put us all in a very bad, is very unappealing. And yet, allowing this kind of thing to happen allows, maybe encourages the idea among people that they can do this and get away with it at will. You can begin as an outlaw, and then if it doesn't work out, well, then you can just come into compliance if you happen to get caught. And if you don't get caught, you've gotten away with it. If you do get caught, well, we'll just rubber stamp it. We'll look the other way. It's a very troubling position that I feel I'm in as a planning commissioner when I see a case like this. This is not the first one. Fortunately, there haven't been a whole lot of them. But then again, you wonder how many just have slipped through and didn't get caught. So anyway, it's a very awkward position, and then it puts the city at expense that it shouldn't have to go through to pursue enforcement. So it's not a comfortable position that you put us in here. It, saying all that, I don't want to vote in favor of a forfeiture on your part or block you. What it's here is not an unreasonable request. Were it not for this history, I wouldn't really think, well, I'd think twice about it, but I wouldn't feel, put out. Frankly, I do feel put out by it, but I suppose I'll vote for it nonetheless just because of the merits of this thing. But I hope the people in this city don't get the wrong message from our approval of this kind of an application with an outlaw history behind it.
I have a question for Callie. Oh,
okay. Let's kind of limit this to a couple more questions.
When I asked earlier about the possibility of combining a second unit, living unit, with an accessory structure into one building, you said the only thing that would be the septic system requirement to be able to handle it and in additional fees. But then there was another discussion about the septic system. Am I understanding that there's, regardless of that, there's no chance of this ever being turned into a living unit because the septic system won't handle it?
The way that the city codes are written right now and the distance of the sewer system prevents a second unit from going on this property at this time with building permits. So the city would not issue a building permit for a second unit on this property at this time based on the size. But in the, say, if we were looking 30 years down the line and sewer was located closer.
Municipal code requires that any resident that wants a second unit have at least an acre of land before they can install a second unit with a septic system or a combined septic system. So in the future, like Kelly mentioned, if Mr. and Mrs. Russell get extra land, can do a lot line adjustment, or sewer is available to them, they then could convert that building to a second unit. So at this time, they can't. But it doesn't preclude them in the future if conditions change.
So it's not so much that the existing sewer septic system is not adequate, it's that there's not enough land because of the combined requirements.
That's correct.
Okay. I couldn't understand why you couldn't just replace the septic system or make it larger right. or add another one. But okay, I understand. No, thanks.
Okay. I just want to close off the discussion by echoing what Councilman Colomarino said, excuse me, Commissioner Colomarino, apologize for promoting
thank you.
You.
Thank you for the promotion, Chuck.
But there's been a policy in the city now to be very, very proactive and friendly towards builders, perhaps bending the other way, to welcome those that perhaps for one reason or another did not get a building permit, but to bring them in so that when ultimately the product does get built, it complies with all the current codes, and that's sort of the program. Years ago, it was probably more draconian, and I lived in a county that had a program where people literally would put camouflage netting up to hide what they were doing, and they just... It was a just terrible program. So I think, in the one hand, it's It's a little hard to make it all even and fair, but I think we're trying to do the right thing, and the city has the right program by bringing this program into compliance. And if Commissioner Colomarino would like to make a motion, we'll move forward.
I think I'll defer to somebody else to make the motion on this one. As I mentioned, I have qualms about it. So I would like to defer to someone else on a motion.
Commissioner Schmidt? Okay. This is no discussion. Let's have a vote.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner DeReese?
Yes.
Commissioner Wingett?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Ward?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0.
Okay. In view of the fact that Director Fraze isn't here tonight, there will be no director's report, but if any of the commissioners have any comments or anything they'd like to get on the record, this is a good time to do it.
Well, could I ask whether the staff has any news, or even if it's not coming directly from the director, are there any updates that we could get about upcoming matters for us or anything like that?
We currently don't have any items scheduled for the next Planning Commission agenda, so we are not expecting anything big coming up soon. I know that the Del Rio project is moving forward, but we don't have a date specified for any hearings.
I thought I had heard something about May for that the last time. Did I mishear that?
I think that that we're moving forward and hoping to bring it to you as soon as possible, but they need to go through all the comments from the draft EIR. So once that is prepared by the consultant, then we will have it on the next agenda for you.
Okay. I declare the meeting over. Thank you very much.